Welcome to the Brand Thomas podcast. In today's podcast, I speak to a supreme beauty industry expert, founder of the Skin Rocks app, author of the beauty bible Skincare, The New Edit, and best loved for her outspoken and honest approach to beauty, Caroline Hirons. In our podcast, we discuss the beauty industry, the good and the bad, what to buy and what to save your money on. I'm Louise Duffy, and this is the Brand Thomas podcast. Caroline, welcome to the Brand Thomas podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm delighted to have you because I've been dying to speak to you about the beauty industry because I know little and you know a lot. So, you know, it's growing and it's becoming more complicated all the time. So tell me, is that the reason why you brought out your brilliant book?
Maybe. I think, honestly, the book was brought out for people like my mum, funnily enough, yeah, who isn't online, can't use a computer, has no interest in doing it really, unless it's maybe to get me to do some shopping for her. Mm-hmm. But it's more for people, you know, I would say, well, I sort of said, I don't need to do a book because I've got the blog and it's already there. And then, you know, when readers started to say, yeah, but I want something I can reference when I'm at home and sit and bookmark and watch telly and read at the same time. And, mm-hmm. or, you know, I want to give it to my sister who doesn't really know what blogs are. I want to give it to my mum who doesn't go online. And I thought, okay, well, I can see the point in that. I want everything I do to have a purpose. I didn't want to do it just for the sake of doing it. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, if during that process I was able to make things a bit clearer for people, then yes, that I think it's a positive that's come out of it.
Absolutely. But for me as a consumer and for many people like me, in terms of ingredients and products, it's hard to keep on top of things. Do you find that with the people who are coming to you and your followers on Instagram?
Yeah, for sure. I think there's a lot of there's a lot of confusion. Some of it is caused on purpose by certain brands, you know, and actually no one in specific. I think everyone can be a little guilty of it, you know, making their product seem like it's too complicated for you to understand. So just buy all three and you'll be fine.
Just do it.
Or, you know, too strong for you to be able to use, you know, really be careful when you use this, it's really strong. And I'm just thinking, well, it's not a prescription drug, so can we all calm down, you know? But yeah, there's a lot of confusion, confusion over where you use things in a routine. We're using far more products than we ever did, you know, 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff out there for sure.
And there's a breakdown of products that we probably haven't had to deal with before. And, that you know, there are brands that are bringing out, you know, different ingredients individually and quite, you know, purse friendly as well. So you kind of feel like you need to have, you feel like an alchemist or a chemist with all of the little potions and lotions. So what's your advice on that and how to approach that?
I think that's the problem. I think a lot of it has actually, although it was sort of, I think the intention was to have more transparency and, you know, sort of educate the consumer. I think what it's done is actually confuse the majority of people. You know, telling people what something's called doesn't tell you what it does for your skin. But if something is called, you know, such and such cleanser or anti-aging, even though I don't like the term, but, you know, a sort of a pigmentation serum, you know exactly what you're picking up. But if it's called hydroxyperoxycobalt, blah, 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 yeah, you're more inclined to be like, I don't know what this is. And that's why I think a lot of the questions I get are, where do I use this? Because exactly, people don't know what it is, you know? Yeah. That's not, I don't agree with the putting distrust into the industry to make sales. You know, people aren't out to just rip you off. And it's the only really, to me, it's the only industry that really gets that. You know, if you think of fashion, a lot of the same clothes, especially in Italy, a lot of the clothes that make high street clothes make the designer clothes, but they don't have any of the questions that we get, you know, oh, is it true they're all made in the same factories? Well, it doesn't matter because it's the formula that matters. You know, if your car is a Rolls Royce or a Land Rover or a Mini, at one point, Land Rovers and Minis were made in the same factory. Mm-hmm. They're not the same thing. Mm. They're both cars, but they're very, very different options. Mm-hmm. So I think it's not, I'm not big on the sort of fear-mongering and disingenuous side. That is what gets my goat, to be honest.
And so while we have you and we're talking about things like that, the celebrity endorsed beauty lines, right? It's only recently that, who was it? It was like Bethany Frankel or something came out and was speaking about
let's say, a particular brand that was selling exactly the same thing, but it was in different packaging. So that's where mistrust, or distrust, excuse me, that's where distrust and the rip-off culture is kind of, you know, growing. And is that something you see a lot of? How do you feel about that side of thing? I know you don't mind calling stuff out either.
Not particularly, to be honest. I think I tend to distrust a product if it's made by a celebrity.
Yeah.
Because my question is always, well, what's your intention here? Because in a lot of cases, if your intention is to help people with their skin, then do the range with a dermatologist, for example. You know, putting your name to a product doesn't mean it's going to be a great product. So my distrust tends to come from people who are sort of cashing in and wanting to make money. I mean, let's be honest, what does Brad Pitt know about skincare? He barely made it through the video. You know, he's like, I'm committed to the cleansing part. Right, well, then why are you selling a £300 serum if you don't use it? You know, it's like, people aren't stupid. Mm-hmm. That's my thing, is like, when we talk to customers as if they're morons, it really winds me up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's talk to people, tell them what your product will do, tell them how much it is. Back, you know, I have no problem with the price of something. People can charge whatever they want for whatever they want. You know, brands across the board, not just skincare, but brands don't owe you affordability. Mm-hmm. You know, that's, do you think, true. Chanel has a problem with the price of their handbags? Of course they don't. They're Chanel. They don't care about your problems. Mm-hmm. It's Chanel. You can't buy it if you can't afford it. Oh, you wouldn't want to spend that on that money on a handbag. Let's face it, it's a small car.
Yeah.
You know? If you wouldn't want to spend that on a handbag, don't. Buy another handbag from Jigsaw or somewhere mm-hmm. else, or Primark, mm-hmm. wherever you want to buy it. Like, people, brands don't owe you affordability. And I think, again, because the beauty industry is predominantly speaking to women, there's this whole guilt thing. Like, you know, people are like, well, I really like this product, but it's £200 and I can't justify that. I'm like, who are you justifying it to?
Mm-hmm.
If you can afford it and it's for you, whose business is it? You know, people don't say that about clothing. Or, to be fair, they'd probably say it about a Chanel handbag, but, you know, clothing and going out for a nice meal, they don't go, oh, I can't justify that. We better just have eggs on toast and stay home. Obviously, there is that. We've all been there. We've all been in that demographic, but I'm not buying into the whole guilt of, you know, I just don't like treating people as if they're stupid, treating, you know, brands treating customers, and actually certain, you know what I mean? Like, certain facets of the media, like, well, you know, do you think it's vanity? Why do you think women want to spend so much on makeup and skincare? And do you think it's, I mean, I did an interview with a very famous newspaper, a few years ago, that was, the opening question was along the lines of, do you think it's a shame that women feel they have to have so much Botox and filler? And I just wanted to, like, headbutt the person through the screen. Like, what business is it of yours? Why do you care? No, it's not a shame. People should do whatever they want to do with their money and their body.
But we do, there is just yesterday I was doing my makeup in a public bathroom and someone came in and I apologized for the vanity. Why would I do that?
Are you okay? Would you like me to come and take your temperature?
I know, there's no need for it. And you have said before, I mean, it's taking care of ourselves.
It's like,
if I feel better because I put concealer on and I, you know, feel better about myself, why should we apologize? But there is that culture of, you know, vanity is a bad thing. It's a bold thing to do.
It's not it. Monkeys groom each other. It's just grooming. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's grooming, you know. If you feel better wearing, you know, the lipstick index is a real thing. You know, mm-hmm. if you feel better with a red lip, and you feel like you've put yourself, you know, you've put your face on. Mm-hmm. You know, my nan, my mum, they wouldn't dream of going to the post box to post a letter without full face and makeup on.
Mm-hmm.
That's that age group. We don't have that now. My daughter will go to the shop in her bloody pajamas.
Yeah.
You know, it's not something I endorse.
Mm-hmm.
But she's 20. Yeah. She's younger. Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. I sit somewhere in the middle. You know, every generation's different, but I'm really not here for the vanity aspect, the... And it's just so disrespectful to an industry that that I believe at my core that most people in it want to make people feel better and look better and not look different, just look like the best version of themselves. You know, I always say, if someone says to you, your makeup looks lovely, you're wearing too much makeup.
Okay.
You should wear the makeup. The makeup should wear you, you know. Okay. Like, if someone says, you look really well, that's me. I'm done. I'm like,
Good. Okay.
We're good. We've scored, lads. You know.
That's what we're here for.
But obviously, again, go for a different look. There'll be people who go want people to say, I love your makeup, you know. Invariably, I think they're younger, but that's all power to them.
Yeah.
Good for them.
Why not? Look, whatever makes you feel well, but it's part of a bigger conversation. And, you know, I've interviewed some of the smartest people I've encountered on this podcast who are leading multinational brands and, you know, building something from the bottom up to you know, and becoming billionaires in the process. There's a lot of smart people running the beauty industry, but there's still an element of, like, I don't think it's held the same esteem, you know, as the motor industry or the tech industry. You know, why do you think that is?
Because they're run by men.
Exactly.
By men, okay. Mostly for men. They mostly speak to men, you know, and it's astonishing to me. You know, I recently, obviously going into the tech world myself with the app, the attitude of people in tech astounds me. Like, how are you employed? You know, they're just so laissez-faire, and so because they know that you need them, because, you know, the people we ended up working with were fantastic. But, you know, you're interviewing people and they're like, well, I want 100K a year and I don't need to come to the office. I don't need to meet you. You can interview me over Skype.
Okay.
And I'm like, goodbye, delete.
Yeah, oh, my God. Yeah.
Like, I don't, you know, because they're men talking to men, you know, and then like flip-flops and chinos to work, but like shorts. I'm like, good, knock yourself out. But when you're here, you need to work. You know, I don't know why they think that women in business are different to them, but that's the disrespect shown to the beauty industry. You know, I'm not sure of the Irish figures, but the UK figures is, you know, 28 billion quid a year.
Well, that's considerable, right?
You know, 28 billion quid. Come on. Outside of the NHS, the beauty industry is the biggest employer of women. And that's why people don't care.
I loved how you spoke about this during, you know, the pandemic and the lack of support. And as you said, barbershops were back open.
Barbers and betting shops were open before beauty.
Yeah.
There was three B's and the male ones were open first. Yes, the odd woman likes a bet. I don't know any woman who would rather bet than have her roots done, frankly.
So, yeah. So, look, I just think you have a very important part in, you know, in the support. You were so outspoken in that. And, you know, the beauty industry needs people like you. So you have this superpower, Caroline. You can make, you can break, you can resurrect a product. You know, how does that responsibility sit on your shoulders? How do you handle that when you're doing
very comfortably?
Good for you.
Very comfortably. But, you know, again, you know, 10 years ago I would have been like, oh no, but now I'm like, no, step into it and own it, because there are too many women who make themselves smaller to make media and other people happy, and I'm not doing it anymore. I think, you know, once you hit 50, I'm a 53-year-old grandmother. I've had enough of other people's shit. I'm sorry.
Were you always like this? Were you, you know, like, it's wonderful and inspiring to speak to somebody who doesn't give a damn, you know, and you'll say what you think and you say, you're like,
I don't know. That's a very big misconception. You don't have any idea what I'm really thinking in my head.
I don't know if I want to know, to be honest.
But yeah, no, Yeah, I have. But, you know, obviously I rein a lot of it in. I don't. Mm-hmm. And that's the other thing. You know, we're called out. Women who speak up are called outspoken. Men are just called men. No, he's got a strong opinion. He's a man. He's entitled to it. Whereas we're gobby, ranty, outspoken. All words I get thrown at me. Yeah. And yet I very rarely raise my voice. I raised my voice a lot during lockdown because it was necessary.
Uh-huh.
People weren't listening. So you just end up shouting, you know.
Yeah.
But I take the position very comfortably because I trust myself to make the right decision for the consumer.
Mm-hmm.
I can't be bought. And I think a lot of brands are still surprised by that, which astounds me.
Yeah. And I wonder about that. You know, you're obviously, there's so many products coming your way. You know, you're such an important voice for a brand, for your endorsement is worth a lot to them. People think that comes with a price tag and still assume they know you, or, you know, I mean,
never with a price tag. If I don't like the product, I won't work with the brand.
So how much of that do you think is going on?
I don't know. I can't speak for anyone else.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly my friends in the industry wouldn't dream of promoting something that they don't use. And again, I think that is mostly poo-pooed and frowned upon by a couple of facets. I think the magazine world was threatened by influencers.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, blogs replaced magazines, if you think about it. I love a magazine. Don't get me wrong. I subscribe to everything. But, you know, we've seen the demise of long read and mags in the last 10 years, especially, you know, like real proper magazines that you grew up with have just gone.
Mm.
So blogs and online replace magazines, and then Instagram replaced blogs. And then influencers replaced journalists to a degree. And so it's to journalists' benefit and to the media's benefit to poo-poo influencers. Mm-hmm. I would never let myself be called an influencer. From day one, I knew it was going to go south. From day one, I kept saying, I'm not an influencer, I'm an expert, thank you. Please don't put me into a field of making out that I'm just here to sell something to you. Because the whole term is, you know, what I can sell to you. That's what an influencer is, right? I know I have influence, but I use it wisely. And I'm very careful with it, you know. But it doesn't mean that my sole reason for being on earth is to sell you a product.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't seen anybody with as transparent an outline on your website as you do. You know, you're very straightforward about that. There's no messing with you. It's here it is. I'm not backing something unless I believe in it. And that's really refreshing. So then talk to me about, you know, how you review products. What's your process? Are you taking it all into account? Company values, benefits of the product? How long do you let it sit with you before you put your voice behind it?
Depends what it is. You know, if there's a sense of urgency because it's a huge launch, and I know now that people will wait for me to give my opinion before they'll buy something, I'll try and do it in a fairly hurried fashion in terms of just getting out my sort of outline of opinion on there. But I wouldn't say that I'm like, you know, using something in a day and then giving a big opinion on it. The only thing I can really do that with is like a cleanser, a moisturizer, serums and things that are treatments that you need more time with. I'll say, look, all the signs are there that this should work. The ingredients list is great. The ingredients that do the job are much higher up the list on the Inky list than some others. So the signs are, you're okay here. Like it's a brand you would trust anyway, that kind of thing. But if something isn't for my skin type, obviously I can't test it. So I will give it to my team. My team are predominantly younger than me. We have a real mixed bag. You know, we have different skin tones, different ages, different skin types. So I will give it to the team and say, can you just let me know what you think about this? Here's how I would use it. But I don't give them anything else. There's no brief. There's no, I think it's great because I don't want to influence them, you know, again, because I'm not an influencer, you know.
You're not. So you're getting those very honest reviews because there's so much there. There's so much available to us. And we're using so much. But I do think that's impacting on our skin because we feel we need to try so much. There's so many things on my cupboard, on my bathroom shelf that I have no routine because you're just kind of sometimes just picking stuff blindly. Everywhere. Can you give us a good guide on routine? What we should be using every day if we can?
It depends on your age and your lifestyle. You know, I'm not going to tell a busy parent who's running out the door that they need to do a 7-step routine. Cause frankly, who has the time, you know, wash your face. If you're older, you might want to use certain things. Like I love an eye cream. Some people don't. Mm-hmm. You know, some people will say, oh, you don't need an eye cream. It's no different. I disagree. I love an eye cream. Mm-hmm. But if you're not 53 and you don't have puffy eyes with dark circles, you probably don't want one. Mm-hmm. All power to you. Put that money somewhere else. Buy yourself a nice bra. But I like a cleanser. I like acid occasionally. I can't use it as often as I used to because when you're in menopause, your skin just doesn't recover as quickly. It's not friendly with a lot of actives.
And what acids are we talking about there?
Depends. I mean, any of them, like glycolic, lactic, PHA.
Okay.
More of an exfoliating acid than hyaluronic. And then, you know, so I do a cleanser or an exfoliator and or a mist. I love a mist. That's the first step of moisturizing for me. I love sticking a mist on my face.
Right.
Eye cream, serum, moisturizer, SPF. That's my morning routine.
Okay.
You know, wash my face, usually a mist, eye cream, serum, moisturizer, SPF, 6 steps. But if you want to just do the minimum, wash your face and put an SPF on.
You're starting well. Okay.
Just, you know, if you've got a teenager, if you can get your teenager to wear SPF every day when they're my age, they won't have to worry about hyperpigmentation serum because hopefully they will have been protected. Unlike those of us who were children in the 80s, where a tan was just the goal.
The goal, it's all you wanted. And now we are working to rid ourselves of that. Well, speaking of then, what about treatments, you know, bar the Botox, bar the filler, are there treatments that you recommend like our IPLs or peels?
In terms of professional treatments?
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, I love a professional treatment. I love laser. I like laser for my melasma and pigmentation. I like laser for tightening, but I haven't really had what I would call invasive laser yet. So I haven't, like, I'd be interested to do the Morpheus treatment, but it's quite heavy. Yeah. And I don't know if I've got it in me. I'm not good with pain. I mean, I've had 4 kids, but you know, anything else, I'm like, ow, ow, I don't know if I want. So, and also it's not, I'm not overly unhappy with how I look. Like every person, I can look in the mirror and go, oh, that looks a bit tired. But equally, like I'm 53 and I've lived a life. I'm supposed to have laughter lines because I've laughed a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, I laugh every day. Mm. So I'm not, I don't want to look like a surprise tambourine.
and that's another thing, you know, one of those things that you are vocal about is the term anti-aging. You just said there, it's not something you enjoy, but aging, like aging is the benefit of life, isn't it? So, I mean, why would we work against
old it? Is the goal.
Yeah.
Old
right?
Is the goal.
What's the alternative?
But if you can, you know, I just don't see, how, to me, Botox, filler, that kind of thing, you know, invasive sort of treatments that you can have with a facialist before you go into sort of a dermatologist's office or a consultant plastic surgeon, which I'm not talking about that that's necessary. I'm just saying like that to me is an extreme. They're no different to, you know, Nora Ephron said the difference between us, and this is for her generation, which was like the 70s and 80s. The difference between us and our grandmothers is hair dye and polar neck sweaters.
Yeah.
Hair dye. That's why we all look younger. Mm-hmm. You know, I look at pictures of my nan, God bless them. When they were my age, they looked like nans.
Yeah.
I don't think I look like a nan.
You do not.
I look like me. And I'm not saying, oh, I'm a buff ting and I'm a supermodel, but I'm not my vision of what a nan was when I was younger. You know, mm-hmm. I don't wear cardigans. You know, I wear an apron. I do like a pinny, to be fair. but you know, I think you know, hair dye, polar necks. And I think now we've got Botox and filler. We're just going to keep looking fresher. I don't necessarily want to look younger. I certainly don't want to be younger. Mm-hmm. You can pay me to be in my 20s again.
No.
It's exhausting being in your 20s.
Oh, no. And, you know, the older you get, the more comfortable you get, as we discussed.
I'm so comfortable. All I want is other people to feel as comfortable in their skin as I do.
So then for a younger generation, how on earth do we protect them from it all? There's so much of it all, you know.
I think we greatly underestimate the younger generation.
You
know, my daughter and her friends are so supportive of each other. And yet when I went to school, it was just like, you know, people would just tell you about yourself. You know, you look overweight, you look fat, you look just in general. I don't mean to me. I just mean, you know, the way that they would get at other girls in school would be for their appearance.
Yeah.
And I just don't see that in my daughter and her friends. You know, if anything, they spend the whole time bigging each other up.
And that's
you look amazing, babe. You look lovely. Oh my God, look at you, babe. Like fire and all this. I don't speak the language, but I appreciate the sentiment. You know, I don't think we need to underestimate the younger generation in some ways. In some ways, they could do with a few lessons, but couldn't we all?
But you didn't have Instagram looking back at you and filtered celebrities.
They're not stupid. They know it's filters. Who do you think uses it all? They know it's filters. It's people like us that are the mugs.
Yeah.
It's people my age, I'm 53. It's people who go into a store and say, can you make me look like this? And I'm like, they don't even look like that, love.
They don't look like that.
They don't look like that. We're on Zoom. I put a filter on Zoom because frankly, I think, oh, I used to look like that but years ago. No, look at that. And then I look in the mirror in the toilet. I go, oh shit, I forgot that's what you look like. But I don't care. They all know it's filters. The kids are not stupid, you know?
God, I feel reassured.
That whole thing kind of got blown out the water. And I'll tell you when the turning point was for me in terms of talking to younger people online, when Kylie Jenner did her lips and and denied it and said she hadn't done anything. And anyone with half a brain cell was like, babe, just say you've had filler. No one cares. You had really thin lips. You wanted bigger lips.
Big deal.
You don't have, you know, the Kardashians' dad was Armenian.
Mm-hmm.
Armenian women are darker, hairier, nice big bums. That's a sweeping generalization. Yeah. But in general, there's a certain demographic, right? You know, the Jenner's dad was Bruce Jenner, tall, thin, lanky, an athlete. And they took after their dad while the Kardashian girls took after their dad. The Kardashian girls, with the exception of Khloe, are shorter. You know, Kendall and Kylie are taller, skinnier, and she had thin lips. Like, she just wanted to change her lips. She grew up looking at her sisters, not Instagram.
Yeah, there you go. And then remember, everyone was doing that sucky thing with their lips, that little contraption.
I mean, bless them.
Desperate.
That's just, I mean, what can you do? But you know, that I think when she had to come out and say, well, no, I've had filler because I was insecure about my lips, then I think young people were like, oh, okay.
Okay.
Oh, I see how this works. But you know, that again is years ago now, you know?
Yeah, we're copping on. Talk to me. I do just want to throw clean beauty at you and see how it lands.
I mean, it could land in the bin.
Yeah.
That would be quite nice. I just, again, the term itself is an oxymoron.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's nonsense. You know, when people say we're really clean, you can just see, especially in London, if there's a row of like seasoned editors or people like me, you can see the heads drop like, oh,
okay.
Again, it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean the product is purer. It doesn't mean the product is safer. It doesn't mean the product is stronger. It's going to do anything. But it doesn't mean it's better for the environment.
Mm-hmm.
It's a meaningless, non-legalized term.
Okay.
And that's how we should all treat it, frankly.
And then that idea of toxic beauty, then, you know, as
same
you
thing.
Said, it's makeup, it's products. Nothing's going to harm you adversely, right?
The amount of testing that we have to do as brands before we put anything to market.
Mm.
I mean, I've started a series with my NPD team, which is obviously new product development, and the scientists that I have working on my team, all of whom are young, educated women in their 20s. You know, they did biochemistry at uni and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And I've started a series with them that we put up on YouTube and we do it on Instagram Live, basically putting to rest any fear that the customers may have. And they can just bombard my team with questions and they'll answer them.
Brilliant.
But we did one on purpose on testing because people just think we can just make something up at the sink.
Yeah.
And then put it on a shelf. That's not how it works.
Mm-hmm.
And no one in this industry, for two reasons, no one as a brand in this industry wants to hurt their customers. One, because it doesn't really make for good return business.
No.
And two, especially if you're American, you are going to be sued.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's anything the Americans are brilliant at, it is suing people.
Mm-hmm.
No one in this industry wants to cause harm to you, to the environment. You know, there's always going to be small exceptions of people who want to overfarm things or just focus on one ingredient. But clean beauty, toxic, it means absolutely nothing. We are a safe industry.
And we have enough to worry about rather than dissecting.
It's all taken care of. There's testing. There's so much testing. The EU is seen as the gold standard
mm-hmm.
of cosmetic testing.
Okay, so when we're spending our money, what are the things we should spend the money on? What should we invest and what should we save on?
Spend your money in the middle.
Okay.
Save your money on the bookends. So cleanser, moisturizer, SPF, you can buy at affordable prices.
Okay.
Great product. The middle, the treatments is where the expensive ingredients are. Peptides, ceramides, vitamin A, vitamin C, all the acids, niacinamide, all that sort of stuff is more, things to work on your pigmentation, all that stuff is more expensive than glycerin, surfactants, hyaluronic acid, things that you would find in the tail ends of things, you know, like moisturizer or the bookend side, like so cleanser.
Okay.
Serums, eye creams, anything that says treatment on it should be more expensive than a cleanser or a moisturizer. Some people want to spend 200 quid on moisturizer. The Lord be with you. Go for it.
That's
the Catholic upbringing in my head just said to myself and also with you.
You'll have a say in the Angelus in a minute. My God.
Oh my God.
But come here. So then, okay, well, that's good advice. Okay, so the treatments and, the, you know, I suppose the more, the things that make the difference, you know, the things that are effective.
Things that are done. So basically your cleanser washes your face. We all know that. Your moisturizer hydrates your skin.
Yeah.
The bit in the middle that you use as a treatment, the bit that you don't need when you're younger, for example.
Yeah.
The bit you don't need until maybe you start smoking or you work in a city or your genetics actually flag up that you're more prone to pigmentation or whatever. The stuff in the middle, the serum, the treatment stage is where you should spend your money.
Okay, perfect. If there was one thing that could make a difference to your skin,
SPF.
This is a hard question. SPF. Okay, SPF.
Not a hard question. SPF.
SPF. All day, every day. Okay.
Every day.
Let's talk then about winter skin. How do we protect our skin in winter, rather?
Well, it depends on your age and your skin type. But again, keep your SPF on because the sun is still bright in winter if you think
mm-hmm.
about, you know, how you have like really lovely, cold, shiny, bright days.
Mm-hmm.
SPF, a facial oil, if you're a bit older, is very comforting on the skin. Doesn't have to be a fancy one, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A slightly heavier moisturizer might be helpful.
Okay.
I'm not saying you need to go out and buy grease,
mm-hmm.
you know, but you might want to amp it up a little bit. If you like a gel moisturizer in the summer and you're finding that your foundation isn't sitting on your skin suddenly, you might need to up the ante on your moisturizer a bit.
Combination skin, I think I might have it. I don't know. It's a term that confuses me. How do you treat combination skin when you need a bit of everything?
I would still buy a gel moisturizer and I just wouldn't put it on my nose or my forehead. Maybe just the remnants. I would apply it on my cheeks, you know, rub my fingers together, massage it through my cheeks, and then put the remnants quickly across my forehead and across my nose, just to sort of a token gesture, if you will.
Vitamin C daily? Will it take care of
it? Not necessarily. No, not necessarily. I think the industry did a great job of making vitamin C the sort of crazy, you must have a vitamin C. And I think, yeah, it can be really helpful. It's a great antioxidant, but it's also quite unstable. So you need to buy a decent vitamin C. And I don't mean expensive. I mean just one that is proven to be stable, because L-ascorbic acid, which is the sort of the most well-known form of vitamin C, is really unstable. It's not. It's like scrambled eggs when it's perfectly cooked. Getting it perfectly cooked to the plate and out to the customer in a restaurant is a skill. You can very easily undercook or make them just go like gelatinous. Mm-hmm. Same with vitamin C, same with azelaic acid, really hard to formulate with. Mm-hmm. But yeah, a vitamin C is a great product, but you don't all have to use it. There's nothing that we all have to use really except SPF.
We're kind of told hyaluronic is one that we should.
No. No, nope.
Okay.
It's handy if you find yourself dehydrated, but in some people, hyaluronic can be quite inflammatory. You know, it's just there is no sort of one size fits all for skincare. Everyone is, if you think about how individual we all are, mm-hmm. you have a room of 20 people, we're all completely different. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't give them all the same skincare routine.
Peptides, what is a peptide for?
Peptide is perfect if you, in the traditional sort of anti-aging sense, and I say that with speech marks because you don't want to be. You don't want to have to worry about peptides if you're 20. My daughter doesn't need to worry about peptides. You know, she's 20, everything bounces. Peptides are for me. Think of them as the building blocks of your collagen, number one. They do other things, but mostly you're looking for some kind of collagen support in a peptide. They're also great sort of to suppress melanin production and things like that. But in general, when you're sort of at the age where you're like, oh, I don't look as bouncy as I used to be. Anywhere on your body, frankly.
Yeah, throw a peptide on. Okay, wow, that'll be my next big investment, body peptide. Finally then, how do you use a retinol? How do you start to use it? A lot of people are scared away when they use it and they break out or the skin looks flaky after a day or two. Best way to use it?
The best way to use it is to remember that there are lots of various forms of vitamin A and it depends what skin type you have, how old you are, how what you've used before. You know, if you've never used them before and you go straight to a TREP, which is prescription strength, you will get flaky skin and it will crack.
Okay.
That's kind of what it's supposed to do. If you use a sort of a gentler vitamin A and you get started gently, you'll be absolutely fine.
Okay.
It's not following the trend. Skincare is one of those things. It's not like fashion. You can't go, this is the buzzword product of the day. This is what you should all be using because it's completely different.
Okay.
Everyone is completely different, but you know, retinoid is probably my favorite ingredient.
Okay. So to power through. Well, listen, I feel smarter in terms of what I'm going to do going forward. So Caroline, we'll see how it works out. But Caroline, thank you so much for sharing all of your wisdom, of which there is so much, and thanks for being so straightforward and real about it all.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I bloody love Ireland.
We love you. Thank you so much, Caroline.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Thomas podcast. If you like what you've heard, be sure to subscribe and share and follow us on Official Brand Thomas on Instagram for more updates.